From Farmington, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 30th day of September 2019, USDA Report Day. The grain stocks were released earlier today, gave the market a bullish lift. We'll talk about that with Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist. He's back on campus at the U of I today. I'm traveling for Hemp Day. We'll hear about that. That took place in Roseville earlier this morning. I didn't have internet connectivity there, so I had to transfer into Farmington. It's about 25 or 30 miles outside of Peoria, headed west on Route 116. So some numbers from the CME group, some numbers also from USDA today. We'll hear about the Hemp Day, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast. We'll do that with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago today. December corn up 16.5 cents at $3.88 on the settlement price. The March at $3.99.5, 15¾ higher. May at $4.05¼ up 14¼, and July at $4.08¼ up 12 cents. September at $4.04¼ a settlement price there, up 6¼. And December of next year at $4.08¼, 5¼ higher. November soybeans 23 cents higher at $9.06. The January at $9.19½, up 22, and the March at $9.30 up 20 cents. May futures 939, 18½ higher, and July at 947, up 17½. August contract 951, 17 higher. The bean oil 37 cents higher, 28.99. The bean meal at 295.90, up $6 even. Wheat futures soft red December contract 8½ higher at 495¾. July the harvest month at $5.10¾, up 8½, and the hard red July at $4.46½, 7¼ higher. Live cattle futures finished the October at 104.57½, up 45 cents. December at 110.30, 27½ lower. Actually, that October down 45 cents rather than higher. Feeder cattle were down $1.92½ today at $142.40 for 100 pounds in November. At 141.92½, down $1.05. Lean hogs there at $65.45. The settlement price up 17½ cents. Crude oil down $1.57 at the hour. Ethanol futures about 9½ cents higher. Heating oil down 3⅞. That's diesel fuel per gallon. And gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price, about $0.05 lower at $1.59¾. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Kurt Kimmel is out of the office this afternoon. However, Todd Hubbs is in the office at the University of Illinois. And of course, I'm traveling today. Todd, thanks for being with us. I know you were watching closely the grain stocks figures that were released earlier this morning. Can you tell me about them? Because they put quite a lift in the marketplace today.
Oh, yeah. The grain stocks reports were a shocker for corn and soybeans. And we saw the corn stocks number come in at 2.114 billion bushels, which is 331 million bushels below what USDA was projecting for the 18-19 marketing year. And so, I mean, that took quite a bit of corn out of play, really supportive in the market. And we saw that soybeans came in at 913 million bushels, and they adjusted the 2018 crop downward to about 116 million bushels to allot for that. So in both cases, we have a lot less corn and beans moving in the 19-20 marketing year than we thought a day ago.
Last week, you talked about this grain stocks number for corn in particular and the idea that there might be more usage. Can you put that in context with where you were?
Well, I thought there might be a little bit of a surprise. Now, I didn't think there'd be a 330 million bushel surprise. I'd be lying if I said that. You know, we've seen pretty bearish stocks reports for the last 4 or 5 years, and I thought there'd be quite a big feed and residual number this quarter, and it turned out to be much bigger than I expected. You know, I'm delighted about it. We needed those bushels out of the inventory. I think what you're seeing here is maybe a combination of some overestimation of the crop. You know, we saw that flooding out in the Corn Belt. Maybe I doubt they had a good handle on that in the June 1st stocks number, and then just some error in the estimation number, but 330 million bushels is a lot. So it's supported the corn prices with the kind of supply situation we're setting up in. I mean, it's still 2.1 billion to carry out, but if we short this crop a bit, things get a little bit tight in corn moving forward. So, yeah, I thought there might be a surprise. I'd be lying if I said I thought it'd be 300 plus million bushels, though.
Does it change the calculus for corn and its price and other items in the WASDE that'll come out in September very much, or in October very much?
Well, you're going to see a huge fourth quarter feed and residual number for 18-19. I think you'd be pushing a billion bushels just because they're not going to adjust the crop size in corn. So that's going to be a huge fourth quarter number of feed and residual. But these are the numbers we're carrying in to the 1920 marketing year. So if you start looking at yield, you know, coming down a bit, if people think yield's coming down, I'm one of the ones that thinks USDA yield's too high. And we could see some real support in corn with one of these harvest type rallies, you know, late after harvest type rallies as we get the yields coming in. So I'm optimistic on that front. As far as the other balance sheet numbers, I don't think you'll see a huge amount of adjustment in the uses in 1920 from USDA, other than the fact that, you know, we're carrying in much less.
But does it tell you about what the ending stocks will look like for 1920?
Yeah, the ending stocks will be lower. I mean, you can just basically move it flat down, right, from take that 330 million bushels out of there. You know, under USDA's current projections, I mean, we'd be looking at about a 1.833 billion bushel carry out in 1920. And that's with their 168.2 yield. So that's quite a bit lower. And we're looking at a 12.9% stocks to use. So I think the price response you're seeing today in the market makes a lot of sense because the corn crops, you know, the corn supply is getting quite a bit tighter.
What adjustments were made for soybeans?
They lowered the ending stocks in 1920. Down to 913 million bushels. They lowered the 2018 yield to 50.6, so it was down a bushel, and they lowered the harvested acres a little bit as well to take 116 million bushels out of the 18-19 supply to round their numbers out. So, you know, we're carrying in 913 in the 1920. You know, at the 47.9, you'd see 1920 ending stocks under USDA's current projections at about 548 million bushels, which brings us down to about a 13.6% stocks to use. So things are getting tighter, and, you know, if we lose a couple of bushels out of that soybean yield, we could be getting down closer to 10, 11% stocks to use, and I think the rally you're seeing in the soybean market's reflecting that.
So finally, this year and the weather that we're having will come to roost, but based on what's left in the bin rather than what yield adjustments have been made so far, I take it.
Yeah, no, we're just talking about what's in the bin, what they found in the stocks report. This is independent of, you know, if USDA keeps their use numbers the same for 1920 in the October report, we're at 548 million bushels, and that's with a 47.9 yield. So we'll see. As you know, and we've talked about a lot, I'm below them on the yield still. So I could see us going below 500 million bushels for the 1920 carryout.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, man.
That's University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Hey, have you dialed in yet with your pledge of financial support? We're just kicking off our fund drive, really, and you can help us out right now at 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455, or go to willpledge.org, willpledge.org, to make your support donation. And do it right now. When you do that, if you're online, make sure in the comments section you put in support of agriculture, or if you're calling in, tell them you're making a pledge, a donation in support of agriculture. I kind of like the $120 level, but frankly, it doesn't matter what you give as long as you do give. And I will know. I'll see it. So trust that I understand when you make that gift how important this information is to you, and it makes a difference to me too. I'm here to serve you. That's what I do. I think of you as my boss. I hope this helps you out each and every day, that all the brokers and the weather folks and the specialists from the University of Illinois that I talk to help you make decisions all the time. If that is the case, 217-244-9455 is the number to call. Up next, we'll hear from one of those specialists and a unique field day in Illinois. Well, earlier on this Monday, I visited Roseville, Illinois, actually a farm just outside of Roseville. That's about 55 to 60 miles due west of Peoria, to talk about hemp production in the state of Illinois. Philip Oberti is a commercial educator in the state and knows as much about hemp production as any in the state of Illinois. I think he would dare to say not an expert, because the research data just isn't there in Illinois, but there are almost 200 people here that are interested in this. Did that surprise you by the number of farmers and others that are here?
To be honest, not really. We've been traveling all over the state, speaking at events and giving people information, just doing some general education, and the interest at each of these events has surprised me early on, but not so much anymore.
Tell me about the kind of research that you've been doing for the University of Illinois. I think this is maybe the first year for that, where you've been looking for data from other states.
So primarily for the university, we're only doing grain and fiber plots. And it's been a very basic demonstration this year. I wouldn't even call it so much research plots as demonstrations to give people an idea what this crop looks like and how it could maybe fit into their systems. But we have a lot of work that needs to be done. We are very far behind on saying a best management practice for this crop. And so that was just the grain and the fiber aspect of this. The folks that are here today are looking for CBD production. And we are working with farmers, getting an idea of what they've done. But it's been a lot of anecdotes and testimonials on what they've done, what is working, what's not. And again, this is just a baseline to get us started moving forward.
How would you divide the grain and fiber crop up compared to the CBD oil crop? Is it an income thing, or are there differences very much between the hemp varieties for the two of them?
Very different varieties, and also processing is entirely different. The reason why grain and fiber hasn't been taken off is because there's no processing in the state, despite that being what most of our corn and soybean producers would be interested in. The CBD side, however, processors, we had up to 300 applications for it to do it on a smaller scale. And so there's just a different market for it, and developing that supply chain for these 900-some growers that we had for CBD. But if I had to put a number on it, I'd say north of 95% of them are CBD, with very few actually growing fiber and grain, but there is a lot of interest.
Wait, come back to me. There are 900 CBD oil registered growers in the state?
We had 900 growers for industrial hemp across the state on 20,000 acres. But again, those were just applications. So we'll see how many of them were actually growing it come this fall.
So we'll have a better idea, really, this fall of how many acres were grown in the state. I'm surprised there were 20,000. That seems like a large number for expectations at a minimum.
Absolutely. I think everyone was surprised, at least initially, how many acres were being applied for. But we will find out specifically how that's divvied up across the state, whether that was CBD, if anybody was just experimenting with grain and fiber just to have some fun with it. But pretty much all that's going to be CBD.
I was listening to the three different stages here today, thinking about what this means in the state of Illinois and where we are in the development of hemp, both as a oil crop and as a fiber crop. It appears to me that we're somewhere in that very, very early stage, I don't know, 1928, 1930, as it relates to hybrid corn.
Yeah, we have, you know, these varieties that we have been growing in our roadways and our ditches, fence rows for the last 70 years, and we've been trying to get rid of them. And now, if we're to look at this from a plant breeding and development standpoint, we have a lot of work to do to get those varieties tested and see how they perform. But those varieties were for grain and fiber, and we're talking here about CBD, which are two very, very different plants. So we have we do have quite a bit of work to do.
What are your expectations for research, for demonstration over the next 6 months, year, 5 years?
Public education, I think, is a huge one. Just letting people understand the differences perhaps between hemp and marijuana. And then also within that, the types of production, grain, fiber, CBD, and where that will fit into their production. But number one is going to be developing best management practices for all three of those production practices, but we're going to need some years and some plots to do that. So moving forward, I think it's just going to be getting some basic research done and then developing an industrial hemp program so we can actually give some recommendations.
Can you tell me what the differences are between hemp and marijuana? I mean, the plant itself appears to look pretty much the same, and I know these are CBD for oil plants.
Well, standing out here, you can certainly smell it, and you would say that there is no difference between hemp and marijuana. But the difference between them is purely in the amount of THC. So if it's testing higher than 0.3% THC, the plant is considered marijuana. And if it's lower than 0.3% THC, it's classified as industrial hemp. So the distinction, whether they look the same, they smell the same, it's going to take a chemical test to determine the difference between the two.
And there's a difference between whether you can grow it for marijuana, THC in the state, and for the industrial uses.
Yes, we're moving forward into January 2020 is where recreational marijuana and the growers will be allowed to do that moving forward. But as the legislation for that still works itself out, we got a lot of ways to go.
How many states allow the growth of marijuana or industrial hemp at this point? And that will change again with the implementation of the last farm bill.
Yeah, offhand, I can't say exactly how many are for recreational marijuana, but moving forward into 2020 with the 2018 Farm Bill going into effect, it will be federally legal to grow industrial hemp across the nation.
200 folks in the room here or in the tent, that's just a big turnout. I you have to be very pleased.
I'm very pleased, and it's just been a great day and a lot of great questions and people really looking for that information.
Yeah. What's the most often question asked of you, and I suspect that there are a lot of them that you can't answer because there's just so little research.
Where is the processing? Where do I go with this crop? And we're determining where those are going to be, where the hot spots for growing, where the hot spots for processing are going to be. But folks just want to know, once I grow it, where do I go with it?
So crop's no good unless there's a market for it.
Absolutely, and the supply chain needs to get developed before we can really make any recommendations on how to grow it too, because the processing at the end of the day is going to determine some of the growing conditions and harvest conditions for this crop.
Thanks so much, Philip.
Thank you very much.
Philip Alberti works for University of Illinois Extension as an educator. He is based in Freeport, Illinois. We're here in Roseville earlier today for a hemp field day. Hey, don't forget to call in at 217-244-9455 with your pledge of financial support to agriculture. You're important to what we do every day here at Illinois Public Media. And make sure that you tell them you're calling in support of agriculture, or if you go to willpledge.org, that you put that right there in the comments section. We clearly will catch that, and we'll know that you're making your donation in support of agriculture at 217-244-9455 or at willpledge.org. Mark Russo now joins us on this Monday, as he always does. He donates all the time because each and every week he does this right here for you and for us. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking your time and volunteering here at Illinois Public Media. Can you tell me a little bit about those weekend rains? Boy, there was an awful big rainfall across an awful lot of Illinois.
Well, Todd, I guess first things first, this is a very exciting here on Mondays. Just love speaking to you and all the listeners. So really appreciate the invite here for every Monday. With the past rains here over the weekend, that was really the story in terms of the magnitude of the rains, especially in the swath from southern Iowa down through northern Missouri, eastward through northern Illinois, and into the northern sections of Indiana and right on the Michigan border. Anywhere within that zone, totals within that zone, anywhere from 4 to 5 inches on the lighter side to even some isolated 8-9 plus inch amounts. And so obviously that did include some of the key acreage here, not only in Illinois, but also for a good swath of the central Corn Belt. And with more rain on the way coming up over the next couple of weeks, this wetness is becoming more of a concern at this stage of the season.
Tell me about the impending rainfall.
Yeah, as we look out, especially from now through Friday, at least the zone of heaviest rains will be aligned from northeastern Kansas through much of Iowa into Wisconsin. Actually, much of Illinois does look to miss out on the most significant rains here, with the timing of it really being tomorrow night into Wednesday for some shower and storm activity across northern Illinois. But again, the heaviest totals look west and north. As we get into the weekend and on into next week, activity, there will continue to be opportunities for rain, but a bit more on the scattered or light totals here coming up. So it doesn't look as heavy or widespread as the next 5 days. But again, all in all, it's an active pattern for much of the Midwest as we look out through the first half of October.
So the frost and freeze dates for most of the Midwestern states come up in October. Is there any cold weather on the horizon for any place?
We do not expect any frost or freezing in really any portion of the Midwest during the next 10 days. There will be 30s coming up the next several mornings in portions of basically North Dakota in the Red River Valley acreage there, but no hard freeze is expected. And once we get beyond this week, actually temperatures look to moderate next week and be even warmer. So bottom line, no sign of any frost freeze for any immature crops here throughout the next 10 to 11 days.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now, I'd like you to take some time right now to dial this number, 217-244-9455. When you do, you're going to tell them you're making a call in support of agriculture. Make sure you do that because they'll make note of it. You can do that online too. There's just a comment section there at willpledge.org. And we'll see it here at Illinois Public Media and know that you're listening to the ag programming and that it makes a difference to you. Now, I like the $120 gift level. That's $10 a month. But whatever level you'd like to give at works for me, as long as it works for you. But do it right now while you have time. Now, I know that over the past several years, you've had a rough time on the farm, and this year has been unique and a struggle. I hope that we've helped you make some decent and good decisions as you've made your way through the year, and we're going to be here the rest of the year to help out as well. So if the weatherman or the brokers or the specialist and analyst that come to you from the University of Illinois make a difference in the way you think about your crop, then why don't you help us out here at Illinois Public Media and willag.org. Make that pledge of financial support. Do it right now. Don't wait. It's quick. It's simple. It's easy. You can make that pledge by writing us a check and sending it to us. You can make a donation on your credit card, be that Discover, American Express, MasterCard, Visa, whatever the case might be. Or, of course, you could do charity and make a donation of grain if you'd like. We can handle that as well. But do it right now at 217-244-9455. Again, the number to call is 217-244-9455. Or if you go online, and that's probably easier, simpler for you, maybe you can do it on your phone because it's easy enough, at willpledge.org. But either way, for agriculture is the important part. And thank you so much for making that donation right now.